In a few short weeks, voters will head to the polls to choose the people who they think will best represent their interests, both in Madison and in Washington, D.C. Today, we feature conversations with candidates for Wisconsin's 85th, 91st, and 93rd Assembly districts. The winners chosen will serve two-year terms representing their constituents. The 91st Assembly District is in western Wisconsin, representing residents in Eau Claire. We'll speak today with Democrat Jody Emerson, who is seeking that seat. Her opponent, Republican Josh Stanley, did not confirm after being offered an opportunity to join the conversation. The 93rd Assembly District is in western Wisconsin and encompasses most of Pierce County, along with portions of Pepin and Dunn counties. Later in the program, we'll speak with Allison Page, the Democrat seeking the seat. Her opponent, Republican Warren Petrick, declined our invitation to appear. But first, we turn our attention to Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District, where Republican Patrick Snyder is being challenged by Democrat Kristen Conway. The 85th District is in central Wisconsin and includes residents in Wausau, Weston, Ringle, and other nearby communities. We'll start with the incumbent in the race, Pat Snyder.
My wife and I were both kind of seeing toward the ends of our careers coming up a lot closer than further. But in the meantime, there's some unfinished things that I would like to be able to accomplish before I do step away. And a lot of that has to do with the committee I'm on, and that's the Children's and Families Committee. I just think that it's so important to be able to get family units as much help as possible if they're at risk, or because what I've found in my years in the assembly is that a lot of times that these kids that are in foster care, or sometimes these young boys and girls who are getting in a little bit of trouble or having trouble in school, they have families that are a little bit at risk or have trauma at home. And the Family First program that came out, it pretty much is trying to identify at-risk families and do what we can to make them stronger and move forward. Also on that theme of kids, I really would like to be able to solve this child care issue to make it affordable, accessible, and you know, if it takes the parents, the business, and the state to somehow make that happen, that's important. I mean, our kids from birth to six is the most important time of their life, and we need to make sure that we engage them and help get off on the right foot. So those are some of the things I'm passionate about before, you know, the time comes for me to step away.
Now, you also serve on the Small Business Development Committee in the state legislature. Right. And you just mentioned the workforce as well. Businesses today really do face some really important workforce challenges with more jobs open than workers are available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate the situation?
Well, I think that the one thing is, you know, the unemployment rate's so low, but how many people are actually able-bodied adults without dependents that maybe aren't in the workforce? We did have a bill out that was vetoed that would have said, you know, with the way the job market is now, and in fact, Rick, I saw yesterday I was at Quick Trip, and they have for an assistant manager position over the starting salary of over $50,000 a year. And so there are jobs out there that do pay a family-sustaining salary. And what the bill said is if you're searching for 6 months and you still haven't taken a job, then the benefits would go away. And the governor vetoed that. And I just think somehow we have to urge everyone to get back into the workforce. And then after that, you know, I really think we need to, you know, maybe look to recruit from other states, as well as legally somehow be able to get immigrants from other countries in. And that means that I'm saying legally, the feds might need to step in with that. But I think that, you know, you see in the summertime, my wife and I attended a wedding up in Door County a while back, and there was a lot of young ladies from the Eastern European area that come for the summer and work, and then in September they go back home. Something like that, if it could be blueprinted for other job opportunities in factories, the farms already have it. So there are solutions to it. We just need to visit about it and maybe become a pilot program for the feds as far as identifying people who want to work, making sure a background check is there, and then give them a work permit to come up and fill a position here. I, I think that's a route we could definitely investigate.
Well, staying on the theme of the economy and so on, inflation really does continue to be a top-of-mind issue for many working families in Wisconsin. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and the fears a lot of folks have for a recession? And what legislative steps would you consider taking?
Well, I think, a lot of it is controlled by the federal government. This inflation is something that after the pandemic kind of affected the world. This war that's going on in Ukraine is not helping the matter either with energy and the costs that go with that. So the federal government, I just think, in trying to solve a problem, maybe created a problem with spending and printing so much money that now we have the inflation factor that goes into it. What we can do in Wisconsin is we have that surplus that we'll be looking at over $5 billion in January with the new budget. And to be able to go in and maybe get the way the taxes are done. I know we've talked about this before. Some people say eliminate the income tax. We can't do something knee-jerk without knowing what might come down the road. But I do think the possibility to get one flat tax, which would allow people to keep more of their money and still give us the revenue we need to be able to operate the state.
Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban was reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
I do think it needs to be updated. I am pro-life, and I do believe in exceptions, though, for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And that's tough, because being present when my kids were born and seeing my grandkids, the gift of life is so precious, but the trauma that goes into a rape and incest on a woman, we have no idea how to get them through that. So those are the exceptions.
Well, let's turn to education and education policy. Pat, on this issue, what would your top priority be?
Make the public schools strong. Make sure they have the tools they need to be able to move forward. When I went to my CESA 9 meeting, I know some of the problems that they're going to be facing, especially our northern school districts, are the cost of fuel. That's really gone up. I saw one of the bus lines with the salaries as well as the cost of fuel is going to be $800 a student for the year. So that's going to be something we'll need to look at to help these school districts out. But, we've had in the reading and the math scores, we've been down, and we had bipartisan legislation to try to help identify and strengthen the reading and math, and unfortunately that was vetoed. So what I would like to do is make sure they have the tools to be able to do this, but in the same sense, I think they need to really focus on the fundamentals in reading, writing, and arithmetic. I know it sounds like a broken record, but I think for individuals to be successful as they move through the high school ranks, and if they choose college or not, those are the things that are essential to be able to be successful.
How do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings?
Well, I think in our district, we've done a pretty good job of most doors. You have to buzz in and identify yourself before they will allow you in. Most is only one entry into the school. They have a nice way of dismissing kids as well. But I think a lot of this, that some of the incidents that have occurred really comes down to mental health. And we put some more money into the mental health, not only for the school system, but in general for folks. People that just are unstable down the road, and to be able to, identify that early and get them the help they might need to avoid some of these things. Because if you look at some of the recent ones, these people were totally unstable and did give off a lot of warning signs when you look at their Facebook and look at some of the testimony from friends and family.
Turning briefly over to the environment, how should the state address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in our local water supply?
I think the monitoring of this, I know that we no longer allow that testing. As a lot of it, the PFAS that is the worst is the chemical for fire the fires for the airplanes and things of that nature. When I dug into this, I didn't realize how much of the PFAS was out there and other things and stuff we eat and stuff we use and things of that nature. But I think continuing testing on this, the one thing that we need to try to get our science community behind is what exactly is harmful and not harmful. The recommendation from the Obama administration was 70 parts per trillion. And now they wanted to bring it down to 20 parts per trillion. But then the state of Minnesota and Michigan, I don't know if they even have a standard. Canada, believe it or not, is 600 parts per trillion. So with that type of non-uniformity, I guess I want to try to get a figure that's right without overburdening the taxpayers with something that maybe when science comes through, it is 100 parts per trillion.
In the final minute, Pat, please share some things that separate you from your opponent and what you'd like voters to know about you that we haven't discussed.
Well, the thing is that I have been now in three terms. I've been passionate in the Children's and Families Department. Mental health has been big with me. Corrections, that has been another one of mine. And I was on the Ways and Means Committee this last session. I hope to get on again to try to give the taxpayers of Wisconsin more relief and ability to keep more of their money. I am again someone that says the state should assist but not take over. I think that when it comes to the funding for the unemployment and for Badger Care, I would love to see instead of a cliff, as you reach a certain income level, that it turns into a slope so that we can incentivize people to keep moving forward in their careers but not lose everything, because I think down the road that will save us money. I think that we need to unify the family unit and try to strengthen that family unit, because I think down the road that will lead to less crime, less incarceration, less kids that come out that might end up homeless or without an education behind them. So those are some of the things that I want to put power to the people of the state of Wisconsin and not into the government of Wisconsin. And I think that people should have their God-given constitutional rights defended by me, and I just think that people in general need to start being kinder to each other.
You're hearing special election coverage on WPR, where we just heard from Republican Patrick Snyder, candidate for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly District. Ahead, we'll hear from his challenger, Democrat Kristen Conway.
I'm Rob Menser. On November 1st, please join me, the Wasadaily Herald, and the La Follette School of Public Affairs for a town hall about what our political candidates should be talking about as they compete for your vote this fall. We'll take a look at what we heard in our survey of Wisconsin voters, and we'll talk about what matters most to you. It's Tuesday, November 1st at 7 p.m. at the UW Center for Civic Engagement in Wausau. Register for the event at wpr.org/presents.
Welcome back to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Earlier, we heard from Republican Pat Snyder. Now, Rick Ryer speaks with his challenger, Democrat Kristen Conway.
So I grew up in central Wisconsin, left for a few years for college and beyond. And like a lot of Gen Xers, moved back to central Wisconsin to raise my family. So I've lived here for 15 years now in Schofield with my husband and my four kids. I'm currently elected alder in Schofield since 2018. And I'm running because I really have a vision of government that is functional and full of compromise and gets things done, and I'm not seeing that happening in our state assembly. So I decided I would throw my hat in the ring.
Today, businesses are facing significant workforce challenges with more jobs open than workers are available to fill them. What can lawmakers do to help mitigate the situation?
Well, I think one thing that we need to take into account is to look at the reasons why they aren't able to fill these positions. I spent some time in the employment sector, and I think there are real reasons why people are unable to fill jobs. Access to public transit is one Wausau and Marathon County have a very limited transit system, and it cuts off many major employers in the area, anything in our West Side Industrial Park or outside of the city of Wausau. That cuts off jobs for people in Rim Mountain, Schofield, and Weston, and those are big areas that have a lot of businesses there. There are some large employers that are immediately out of reach and for people that don't have access to transportation. Another factor that I think has been talked about a lot here is specifically for working families is the child care shortage, the access to affordable and accessible child care. I personally have been both a working mom and a stay-at-home mom. While neither one is easy, I can tell you I was really lucky to be able to negotiate a flexibility. School schedules don't always align with work schedules, so that was important. And lastly, ensuring that your employees are well compensated. One job should be enough. So I think that the legislature should take a serious look at raising the minimum wage, making childcare more affordable and accessible, and taking a look at public transit to make sure that people can get to work.
That's really an interesting concept about public transportation. How would you recommend increasing funding for local bus lines to get people to work?
Well, I think a lot of what we're going to talk about today, I'm going to guess, is how are we going to fund that? Because that is the question for pretty much literally everything from education, and I think I have one thing is that to look at making sure that the large corporations, the billion-dollar corporations, are paying their fair share of taxes. One study I read said that something like 20% of the businesses in Wisconsin that have billions of dollars of profits, even through the pandemic, are paying zero taxes. A lot of this stuff that we need to fund our education and our roads and our infrastructure. With everything increasing in price without raising taxes, we need to look for new revenue streams. And I think number one is making sure that companies, billion-dollar corporations, are paying their fair share of taxes. And the second one, which I'm assuming you're going to ask me about, legalizing marijuana. There are states all over the country that have legalized marijuana, and they're using those funds for education, infrastructure, public safety, public health.
Well, inflation continues to be a top-line issue for many working families in the state. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and fears of recession, and what legislative steps would you consider taking?
We do have this budget surplus that everyone's been talking about, and the governor has come out with several different plans on what to do with that, and I think all of those plans really, take some of the stress off of the low-income earners and the veterans and the seniors on fixed incomes. Another, creating the caregiver tax credit, it was another one that the governor had proposed. Those are issues that can really make a difference in the day-to-day lives of, the Wisconsin residents. If we have people from both sides, and we do, we have people from both sides of the aisle saying they want to alleviate taxes and give breaks to the people of Wisconsin, then let's do it.
Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban was reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way?
I think Wisconsin's existing abortion law from, what year did you say, 1849?
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be repealed. I do not think that the government nor judges should be involved in any personal health care decisions. So I would like to see that repealed, I'm sorry, and I would like to see Wisconsin to legalize abortion to make it safe for women to access that vital health care.
Let's go back to an issue that you just talked about a little earlier today,
mm-hmm.
Education and education policy. In that mm-hmm. area, what would your top priority be?
My top priority would be to increase school funding. The Blue Ribbon Commission, which came out in, I think it was 2017, 2018, they came out with dozens of recommendations on what to do for students, guaranteeing a per-pupil amount, ensuring that poverty is taken into consideration. I think using any or all of the recommendations that came out would be a very good first start. The formula that is used right now isn't very equitable. Rural schools, schools with lower property tax rates, kind of are getting not as much funding, and I think that's something that needs to be looked at. I think our formula itself needs to be looked at and addressed.
What can the state do to attract and maintain qualified teachers?
Well, I think the first thing that we can do is pay them fairly, allow them to bargain for their wages like they used to do. I think teachers are under a lot of stress right now coming off of COVID and the year of what the heck is happening. I think they need to be supported and they need to be respected, and I don't see that happening right now. So I think that's number one. Number two is maybe some loan forgiveness for teachers that, and I think there is a program that does this, that forgives loans for teachers that especially work in underfunded or rural schools. But I think number one is teachers are just tired. They're tired of fighting. They're tired of, you know, not earning respect and not having enough funds to do what they do best, which is teach. So I think that's number one.
Turning to public safety, how do we keep our schools and communities safe in the wake of recent deadly shootings?
Well, I am one of those people that you'll hear talk about the fact that you can, you know, protect the Second Amendment, but also make people safe. I have four kids that I send off to school every day, or going to a mall, or we go to a parade, and gun safety is always on my mind. There are laws that, like I said, you can respect the Second Amendment. I came from a family of hunters, but I also think that there are steps that we can take that will make people safer, including red flag laws and making sure that every gun sale has a background check. I have no problem with someone legally owning a gun. My problem comes with the fact that they can then sell that gun at a garage sale or to someone off of Craigslist. This is with no background check whatsoever. Those are some of the things that I think we can fix to make people safe.
Well, let's turn a little bit now to the environment. How should the state address contamination by PFAS and other chemicals in local water supplies?
Yes, and I forgive me because I just read the article before this, but the EPA just came out saying that PFAS were going to, and again, I just read it probably 10 minutes before we started this interview, that they were going to, they're federally now have to be held under the Superfund so that they need to be covered. I feel like the state needs to really step in here and make sure that the municipalities, again, have what they need in order to fix these PFAS, to get rid of them, and also hold the people that did the polluting accountable. That's something that was another thing that was vetoed by Governor Evers, was that the assembly passed a bill that said, like, yes, we will give these municipalities grant money to help them clean them up, but they needed to hold harmless the companies that did the polluting. And I think that's not fair to the Wisconsinites to have the taxpayers and the public utility use, you know, people who pay for public utilities to clean that up when it was something that the company did. And the company did knowingly, and that's something that needs to be addressed.
Kristen Conway, the final minute we have, we ask that you share some things that separate you from your opponent. And what else you'd like voters to know about you that we haven't talked about?
Okay, well, one thing that I think I say a lot of is that I don't see myself as a politician. I try to answer questions the best that I know, and I will give my opinion, which is something that, you know, my opponent doesn't seem to do a lot of. There's a lot of posts in social media about, you know, out in the community, but not a lot about how he votes or why he votes on things. In Schofield, granted, it's a city of 2,000 people, so we're not, you know, we're the smallest of beans. We're not very large, but there have been some votes where I have absolutely gone on record saying I voted this way. This is why I voted this way. I'm very transparent. I've had people tell me I'm too honest, but I'm very transparent. And if you look on my website, you will see just about every issue, how I feel about it and what my stance is and why I think the way I do. And I don't think that's anything that you will see from my opponent.
That was Rick Ryer speaking with Kristen Conway, the Democratic candidate running for Wisconsin's 85th Assembly seat. Now, Ezra Wall speaks with Democrat Jody Emerson, who is seeking to represent the state's 91st Assembly District. Her opponent, Republican Josh Stanley, did not confirm his participation, but was offered an opportunity to join the conversation.
Businesses are facing a lot of workforce challenges with more jobs open than workers available to fill them. What can state lawmakers do to help mitigate a problem like that?
So I think what the state can do and what our responsibility is to create an atmosphere in which people want to move to work and raise their families. And that includes making sure that we have great schools, both at the K-12 level and at the higher education level. It makes sure that we have, people have access to safe and affordable housing, that there's good roads to drive on, that there's parks for them to play in with their kids that they're raising here, things like that. I think that when we create an atmosphere that people want to live in, then we will see more people moving to Wisconsin to work here. What damages our state is the culture wars that we have seen, especially in this last session. I've also talked to a lot of college-age students who are, or I should say high school students going into college, that they're really looking at going to different states because of Wisconsin's 1849 law banning women from having say over their body. These are the things that will not bring people to Wisconsin. And so how we create an atmosphere in the state that people want to be here for, that's how we can move Wisconsin forward.
Inflation has been a huge part of the economic conversation in recent months. What steps can be taken at the state level to address rising inflation and people's natural fears of whether we're going to face a recession?
Yeah, I was really impressed with the governor's plan that he released recently about how to use some of the surplus, helping with, the minimum markup for gas laws, the capping insulin, things like that, I think hit people and vulnerable people exactly where they're at. But when we're looking at rising costs of gas that have happened earlier this year, there's also a time where these fossil fuel companies are making record profits too. And so, I really question whether it is inflation that is happening at the pumps or whether it's price gouging.
You referenced Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban that was reinstated after the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. What should happen to Wisconsin's existing abortion law? Do you favor it being updated, done away with, expanded, et cetera?
First of all, that 1849 law was put in place a year after our state became a state, at a time where no women had the right and ability to hold office or to vote. And so these were laws that were made about women without women at the table. So just by that stance alone, those laws need to be vacated, and we need to have overturned them a long time ago. But the fact of the matter is that anytime somebody is making that decision, whether to terminate or to carry a pregnancy to term, it's a very personal decision. And that needs to be between the person carrying that fetus and whoever they choose to bring into the conversation. Hopefully that's going to be a medical professional and whoever is supporting them in their journey. But we don't know whether that fetus has a birth defect that's incompatible with life. Perhaps there's something that has happened to the person carrying that fetus, a ruptured membranes or something like that, that is putting their health at risk. And we need to be careful about saying that, like, in all circumstances under this column, you have to do this. In all circumstances under this column, you have to do that. For every 100 people that choose to terminate a pregnancy, there's 100 different stories and 100 different reasons why. And I don't think that a politician has any say or room in that medical decision at all.
Public education is obviously an important issue to voters across Wisconsin. There is really no more important concern for most people than what's to become of their children and raising them to be as successful as possible. And as you think about how to attract qualified teachers to Wisconsin, there are a lot of issues that could come into play: workload, salary, you know, competitive salary, those kinds of things. What can we do to attract and maintain qualified teachers to Wisconsin schools?
Well, first of all, we've got a funding formula that is broken and has been broken for a really long time. La Crosse and Clear are similar size cities, similar size districts. However, they get different amounts of money because of 30 years ago, Eau Claire was spending X a number of dollars and La Crosse was spending a different amount. And that's where the funding formula kind of locked in. And I would also add that 30 years ago was when Eau Claire's major employer was going out of business. And so all entities around here, you know, tightened their belts and did the best that they could. And Eau Claire's been punished for it ever since. So funding is a big piece. We need to rework the funding formula from the beginning. Another piece of the funding formula that we need to fix is trying to run two different systems for our schools under the same umbrella. The Republican legislature is bound and determined to keep funding voucher schools. And that's fine. If that's the decision that the state wants to make, that's fine. But right now we're having an expected $5 billion surplus. So I think it would be best if we took the money for the voucher schools out of the surplus and not out of the public education funds, because the way that it works right now is that the money for public education is set aside. The voucher school money comes off the top, including busing, special ed, all that kind of stuff. And the public schools are left to manage what's left over. And so if we want to take that, if we want to have voucher schools, let's at least take it out of the surplus that we have. For Eau Claire, that would be well over $1 million. I don't have the updated numbers in front of me. But this would really help our budgets fall shortfalls at the district level. But aside from the money piece, the other thing that we can do, we need to remember that teachers, staff, that they work for us, that we are their bosses. And a good boss appreciates the work that is happening. Simply reaching out and thanking them for the work that they're doing, instead of having mass quantities of people heading to school board meetings and yelling and screaming and trying to ban books and trying to ban teaching methods and things like that, if we could appreciate the teachers, I think that would go a long way to helping teachers stay in the position that they're in, because I really truly believe that teaching is a calling. And people who are doing it want to be doing that. They're doing that even though they could make more money in the private sector because of the calling that it is. And where they've decided to throw in the towel more often than not is not being appreciated by their community and also by, the parents and, being micromanaged.
I want to get a question in here about environmental policy before we wrap our conversation up. How should the state address things like contaminated drinking water, PFAS, other chemicals that are in local water supplies all over the state?
Yeah, and that is a hard question that a lot of people are wrestling with all over the state. Eau Claire has contaminated wells that we've had to shut down in order to keep the water that's coming out of people's taps safe. I think having safe water is some of the basic things that we need to provide for the people of the state of Wisconsin. I was really happy to see that the governor has invested a large amount of money into being able to test private wells, public wells, business wells, church wells, whatever it is, because I know a lot of people were afraid to test, not knowing how they could help this. So testing on a regular basis is first and foremost. We also need to work on mitigation factors. I'm not a water biologist. I don't know the best ways to do that. We have some really smart people in the DNR and at our public works department that are working on these things. But it also needs to go hand in hand with figuring out where these contaminants came from and how do we help hold those polluters accountable, whether they're still doing it or whether it's something in the past. And this is something that's not going to be cheap for us to mitigate this, building new wells, making sure that people have clean and safe drinking water. This is going to cost a lot of money for our state, but the cost of not dealing with this is even larger.
We have just about a minute left, and I want to give you an opportunity to let people know why you are running for re-election in the 91st and what separates you from your opponent.
Yeah, thanks for that question. So for me, getting into the legislature was about a continuation of public service. I've always been very involved in my community, whether it's at the school level, the neighborhood association, or greater community issues. And as my kids grew up and moved out of the house, I was looking for the next place to put my volunteer efforts and community involvement. And this position opened up, and there's still a lot of stuff that I have left to do. I've been successful in getting some legislation passed. I was really pleased this year that we passed a PTSD bill for first responders that allows them to, if they're suffering from PTSD, firefighters or police officers or law enforcement, I should say, that they can get workman's comp for that injury that they have suffered on the job. Because I think taking care of our first responders' mental health is just as important as taking care of their physical health. We still have a few loopholes in that bill that we need to finish up and that we need to close and expand on. But that was one of my proudest moments over the last 2 years.
That was Ezra Wall speaking with Jody Emerson, the Democrat seeking Wisconsin's 91st Assembly seat. Her opponent, Republican Josh Stanley, did not confirm after receiving an invitation to participate. When we return, we'll turn our attention to the race for Wisconsin's 93rd Assembly seat. Welcome back to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now we'll hear Ezra Wall's conversation with Allison Page, the Democrat seeking to represent the state's 93rd Assembly seat. Her opponent, Republican Warren Petrick, declined our invitation to appear.
I was born and raised in Western Wisconsin, 6 of 9 children in a large Catholic family, and I grew up in River Falls. Like I tell people, I was born in Western Wisconsin. I'll probably live my entire life here. Went to school at UW-Madison and then off to Marquette, graduated with a degree in nursing from there, and then went on to graduate school at the University of Minnesota in healthcare administration. I'm married. My husband is here in River Falls. We've raised our 5 children here, and we've got 7 grandchildren. We've owned a business here in town. And I guess why I'm running is I love our democracy. I love the state of Wisconsin. I love what the state of Wisconsin stands for. And I love the people of Wisconsin, and I want to serve them and ensure that the future of our state is as bright and wonderful for future generations as it was for my generation. What qualifies me? Well, I think it's good to have people of all perspectives in our state legislature and in our government. I've spent my life solving problems in healthcare, and I'd like to take that expertise to Madison to apply those skills there. We need people in government who are willing to get together with other people and solve the problems of the day and shape things for the future of Wisconsin. We need to get rid of the partisan ways in our government and bring people together to solve problems. That's what I would like to do. I have those skills, and I would like to apply them in government.
You talked about being business owners in your family. Businesses today are facing big challenges with attracting the workforce that they need, more jobs open than workers available to fill them at the moment. What can lawmakers do on a state level, on a Madison level, to mitigate this situation?
Workforce is going to be the biggest issue we have. I'll use an example. What we can do is create a state where workers want to be. And how do you do that? You create a state where people want to raise their children. So what policymakers can do, in short, is create a state of Wisconsin that is a place that people want to move to because it's a great place to live, it's a great place to raise children, it's a healthy place to be. That's what the next generation wants. That's what they're looking for in places to live. And I think that's the number one best thing that the state of Wisconsin policymakers can do to preserve the future of the workforce of this state. That, and of course, part of that is a really, really strong education system, educating children so they can get to adulthood with the knowledge and skills they need to contribute to society, live their dreams, and be able to compete in a 21st century economy.
What about inflation that's pinching a lot of families right now, and not just inflation on everyday items that you need to run a household, but the actual houses themselves, cars, everything is just astronomically more expensive, it seems.
It is. And a lot of the levers, when you think about inflation and the economy in the broad terms, a lot of the levers for influencing that are at the national level, like interest rates and infusing funds to families, tax reductions. Most of those are at the national level. But at the state level, there's a lot of things that we can do. In the short term, we, the state, can infuse some funds into people's pockets. There's ways to do that. And the long-term approach to that is really building a resilient economy in the state of Wisconsin.
This year, notably, the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, and with that, Wisconsin's 172-year-old abortion ban becomes the law of the land. Should Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated in any way, and what would you recommend?
Yes, Wisconsin's current abortion law should be abolished and replaced with something that makes sense for the state of Wisconsin. I believe that women should have the freedom to choose what occurs with their body and their health, and period. And so I believe abortion should be legal in most circumstances for sure, and probably all. I am open to looking at regulations that create timeframes for things. However, if you look at it, the bottom line is that abortion should be legal, and a woman should have the freedom to make the choices that she wants to make for her body and her life. I am someone who has lived through the decision to have a therapeutic abortion past the date at which it would have been legally allowed, and I'm here to tell you that those decisions are not made lightly by people. Those decisions are not black and white. When you say abortion should be legal, when it involves the health life of the mother, that is not a black and white decision. Doctors don't have crystal balls. They can't determine whether someone's going to die imminently or not. When you're making those decisions, as I made that decision when I was 26 years old, I had three small children at home and a husband. I made that decision with by myself, with my family and my doctors and my God. And that's where that decision needs to rest. No one else belongs in those decisions. So I firmly believe that women should have the freedom to make these decisions, and the law should not impede on their ability to make those decisions.
You talked in your opening remarks about the importance of providing quality education for Wisconsin's children. On the issue of education, as a state legislator, should you be elected, what would be your top priority on the issue of education?
I think our public education is absolutely crucial to the future of our democracy. So three things that public education does. It's core to our democratic process. You have to have an educated electorate to do a good job in putting good people in office. Also, education is core to building a strong workforce. We have to have an excellent workforce. It's what's going to propel us into the future. And thirdly, and very importantly, is our public education system is the system in which we integrate society. People might come from all over, but their children go to the public schools. They get to know people of other backgrounds, and they become friends. It's the integrator. So our public education system is our great integrator, and it's also our great equalizer. It's where every child, no matter a background, can go and get a great education, an education that would allow them to pursue their dreams and become what they want to become, not based on their background, not based on how much money their parents have, but based on their ability to access that education. And that's what we want for our society. So I'm a big supporter of public education.
And what about making sure that those classrooms are full of the most qualified teachers that we can have access to? Is it workforce strains, teacher salaries are an important issue. What's it going to take to maintain a qualified teacher force in Wisconsin?
Right. The way I like to say it is teaching needs to be a good job. It's not all about the money. When you're picking out what you want to do with your life, there's lots of reasons why you decide that what your career will be. Money is one element of it. The money needs to be good. So that would you tell your grandchild, you know, you should think about being a teacher. I think you'd be really good at it and you can make a living. People expect to be making a living. Sometimes, and some perspectives are that we're expecting people to basically, in some ways, do volunteer work. I know lots of people who teach. They spend tons of their own money to make good things happen in the classroom because they're good people, and they want good things to happen for children. So I just stick to that unions, the union representation with the teachers, I support their right to unionize, and I support collective bargaining. But the bottom line is teaching needs to be a good job. And it needs to be a job that I would say to one of my grandchildren, that's a good job. You should grow up and be a teacher.
And there's been a lot of focus on education recently and a lot of interest in how educational policy is set in our communities. A lot of people going to school board meetings, maybe for the first time. How much authority or involvement should parents have on an immediate level like that over what curriculum is taught to their children or what they're being taught about social issues like race or sexuality or things like that?
Sure. I served on the Board of Education, the River Falls Board of Education, from about 1985 to 2000 in there, and served for many years on that board as the chair of the board. So a lot of time involved in the schools. And parents do have involvement in their children's education. The Board of Education oversees what is taught in the curriculum, and the state of Wisconsin has a set of standards so that all children in Wisconsin have a level kind of threshold of learning. And that can be added to by the school districts, but probably not taken away from. So parents do have involvement. We elect our school boards, and the school boards hire the administrators. They take the advice of well-educated people who have spent their lives in education, and there we go. Now, should parents be able to go through the curriculum every day and decide, well, Johnny's going to take this and Johnny's not going to do that? There has to be some parameters around that. Right? So parents do have involvement. I think they have very, very good involvement with representation on the Board of Education. And the Board of Education can set parameters, but they have to be within what is set by the state educational standards. So the system is there. It's been politicized in the last, several years now. And that I don't think is necessarily a good thing for our children.
How about the question of school safety in light of recent deadly shootings that we've seen in our country? How do we keep our schools and communities safe?
Well, that gets into the whole question around guns, which I assume that you're going to want to address. But how do we keep our schools safe? And there is an element of what's called hardening our schools or making them safer. When I was a student in the dorms at UW-Madison, anybody could walk into the dorms and just knock on your dorm room door. I've had children at Westside Elementary in River Falls. When my children were in elementary school, I could just walk in and walk up to the classroom. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. You walk into that school, you go to an office, they want to know why you're here. They're obviously looking at you to see that you don't have a rifle on you. There's a lot more being done. But I think making our schools safer, having our schools be locked, things like that is perfectly appropriate. It's not the be-all and the end-all of managing what's happening with guns.
We have about a minute left. Allison Page is the Democratic candidate for the 93rd Assembly. The incumbent is Warren Petrick, the Republican. Allison, I want to give you an opportunity in our very last minute. What sets you apart from your opponent in this election, and why do you feel like people should consider you?
I think I'll bring the professional expertise to solve problems, get things done, work collaboratively, and not have a tolerance for inaction. That's exactly what will set me apart for him from Warren Petrick. The other thing that sets me dramatically apart from him is I will support a woman's freedom to control her body and her access to reproductive health care. I will absolutely advocate for that and will not mince any words doing it. So that's the big one. The other one I think would be focusing on education. Over the last 10 years, Warren Petrick has been in office. Our investment in education has actually not kept pace at all with inflation. In fact, if it had kept pace, we would have put $75 million more into public education last year than we actually did. We need to invest in public education, and in public education needs to work for the future of our society.
That was Ezra Wall speaking with Allison Page, the Democrat seeking to represent the state's 93rd Assembly seat. Her opponent, Republican Warren Petrick, declined our invitation to appear. Thank you for listening to our special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. You'll find all our candidate interviews after they air at WPR.org/election22. Next week, we'll hear from candidates in additional races. Find all our election coverage from stories to candidate interviews at WPR.org.